Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Talk radio. Talk radio. Julia Hartley Brewer at breakfast on Talk Radio.
Good morning to you. This is Talk Radio Breakfast with me, Julia Hartley Brewer. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Matthew Lesher from the Adam Smith Institute is still joining me, and delighted to be joined right now by the Environment Secretary, George Eustace. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Always good to find other people working on a bank holiday Monday. Very, very encouraging. Now, you're here to talk about what there has been, I mean, undoubtedly the hugely successful charge, the levy on single-use carrier bags introduced back in 2015. I can't believe it's 5 years ago. 5 pence a bag. That has been hugely successful in getting people to use reusable bags, bags for life. But you're announcing today that it's going to be increased, indeed doubled from next year. Why do you need to bring in a 10p charge?
Well, we've looked at this. We're also extending it, by the way, to smaller retailers. So it applied first to the larger retailers, mainly the supermarkets. As you said, it's been a great success. The number of bags used, single-use bags, has gone from some 7.5 billion. And that's been reduced by about 95%. But the evidence we've got is that increasing it to 10 pence will make a further difference, will further drive behaviour change and get more people thinking about taking a bag with them before they go shopping, getting in the habit of doing so, as many already have done, but also extending it to some of those smaller retailers who at the moment between them still issue around 3.5 billion bags a year. We want to see a similar reduction on that front. Many of those small retailers are up for doing this. They want to be supportive. Some of them have tried to do it voluntarily, but feel a bit undermined if other retailers don't. So we're going to extend it to everyone. It's a policy that's got quite a lot of support from the public. Public consciousness around plastics has been rising, so we hope to see a further reduction.
I can absolutely understand the extension to smaller retailers. I was quite surprised in a local newsagent buying, you know, a couple of pints of milk and then giving it to me in one of those very thin plastic bags and thinking, wow, I haven't seen one of those for a long time. But if a policy, if a tax, it actually has a 95% success rate, well, I mean, there aren't many other taxes that have that sort of success rate. I'd like to say I didn't want the tax to come in. I thought it was ridiculous at the time. I stand corrected. It has worked. We're no longer using those bags. But why would you need to double it? If people are already not buying, not taking plastic bags, and they're choosing not to pay 5 pence for them, why on earth do you need to double it?
Well, we think it will make a difference. Obviously, we looked at this closely. I understand your point, but we had a consultation on it. We looked at it closely. And I think there are two things. There's a sense that after a while, for those who've not got in the habit of reusing bags, then that the 5p starts to become something they get used to, and therefore you need to have that extra spur to remind them to think about this, to try to drive behaviour change. But also it means that more people are likely to choose one of the bags for life and are then more likely to reuse that rather than staying in the habit of single-use carrier bags. So we looked at it carefully. I understand your point. The 5p has indeed been very successful on supermarkets, but we judge that moving it to 10p will make a significant
okay. Disadvantage. Look, I mean, I've never understood why, you know, if I buy a plastic bag, I should be blamed for someone later on, you know, a year on, throwing it into the Pacific Ocean and killing a dolphin with it. I've always thought that was rather strange. That they seem to be very different issues. But undoubtedly, we've got rid of having all those plastic bags. However, in terms of the environmental benefits of that policy, there's still quite a big question mark about this, because even though people like me, I mean, I occasionally use the thicker plastic bags, the ones that already cost 10 or 20p, but mostly I use some reusable bags. And again, I've used them for all the 5 years, big solid bags. Well, they're probably nearing their end of the life now. But a thick plastic bag needs to be used 37 times before it actually saves in terms of environmental output and carbon emissions and that. Paper bags, 34 times. Cotton bags, very, very popular, very green, and people wear them with a sort of lot of virtue signalling, you have to use them more than 7,000 times before you've actually had a lesser impact on the environment. So although we've been successful in cutting down the number of plastic bags used, have we actually done any good for the environment?
Well, yes, we think we have. We've looked at both measures, the carbon emissions that come from the manufacture of bags, but also obviously the total volume of plastic that's at risk of getting into the environment on both those fronts, it has been a success. I know that people do raise the issue that those bags for life, they're a thicker plastic bag. If people just keep buying them and disposing them, then obviously that is worse. But overall, they're not doing that. People are reusing those bags. And if you consider not just the, you know, the carbon input to these bags, but also the impact on the environment with plastics getting into the ocean, this has been a very successful policy. It's why we want to extend it.
OK, let's also talk about other policies. Some tax rises were floated in the Sunday papers at the weekend, whether it came out of the Treasury or another department, even possibly Number 10, who knows? But we are looking at £30 billion of tax rises being floated, including things like corporation tax going up, capital gains tax at the same rate as income tax, pensions tax relief cut, cutting possibly the foreign aid budget, lots of other taxes as well into the bargain. Do you think the possibility of all these tax rises is a reason why the Labour Party are now at 40% in the polls, neck and neck with the Tories? Do you think you're actually the Conservative government that a lot of people voted for in last December actually expected to get?
Well, look, I think the point I'd make is in the run-up to any budget, and we've got one obviously this autumn, there's always a lot of speculation about what may or may not be in there. I mean, you know, you'll know, Julia, as a minister in the government, I can't comment on that speculation. Indeed, I'm sure that Rishi Sunak and the Prime Minister are thinking about what the approach should be in that budget. There'll probably be some tax measures, probably be some spending measures as well, just as is the case in every single budget, but I can't really comment on that speculation. But look, on the wider point, yes, polls do move around a lot. We've been through some incredibly difficult challenges, obviously trying to manage this coronavirus in common with countries right around the world. It's been an evolving situation. We've been learning more about the virus as it goes on. We've had to react to things very, very quickly and refine our approach as time moves on to try to get things right. It's been a very difficult situation, but I've learned a long time ago not to base everything on a single poll result that comes in a Sunday newspaper.
Okay, but let's also talk about, you know, just general faith, general confidence in the government. Lots of concerns, and we've just been hearing about the issues over the exams fiasco and how that dented confidence for a lot of parents, whether or not the government was competent in dealing with schools going back. A lot of people also questioning this drive to get people back into the workplace. You're obviously at Westminster right now. Westminster is MP's supposed to be coming back tomorrow. I'm in my workplace right now along with the production team. Millions and millions of others are now working from home pretty much full time. The government's supposed to be having this big back to work campaign this week. Are we going to see that? And is the government even confident they can get people back to our city centres?
Well, look, I think it's important to note that, you know, in many walks of life right around the country, people have been working. So if anybody was working in a food factory, they would never have even gone into lockdown properly. We were asking them to continue to work, and their companies worked out ways to enable that to be done safely. Sectors like construction were returning from June. Other manufacturing sectors have been getting back in the saddle for some time now. And our message really is the final piece of the jigsaw, if you like, those people who work in offices. We want to make sure that they can return to work safely. We're not forcing them to return to work. It's a judgment that obviously companies individually have got to make about the number of staff they want back, how many can work safely in their own particular office environment. But our message this week is that, you know, the guidance is there for employers. People can work safely in an office environment. And we want to encourage those conversations to take place so that, well, we'll never get back to normal. We can get as many people as possible.
Just finally, what percentage of the civil servants and the staff in your office in the Environment Department are back at work now in the workplace?
We don't, but I've had a team of civil servants working very hard throughout this pandemic. And I've certainly been back in the office in DEFRA, supported by staff on a daily basis.
Okay, so what percentage of your staff are back in the office?
We don't have a target for the percentage, but in common...
I didn't ask you what the target was. What percentage of your staff are back in the office?
Our target, if you like, Julia, is to make sure that it's a safe environment for people to get back.
I didn't ask you about a target. I asked you how many of your staff are back in the office.
Well, today it's a bank holiday, so I suspect very few.
Okay, how many were back in the office on Friday when it wasn't a bank holiday?
Well, I don't know how many were there on Friday, but certainly
you don't know how many of you don't know how many people in your own department. You're the environment secretary, and you don't know how many staff in the environment department are in the office.
I didn't know precisely how
okay,
many.
Okay, all right, 812, 813. What percentage? Oh, is it 5%? Is it 20%? Is it 50%? You must have a rough idea. Surely. You must have conversations with your permanent secretary for whose responsibility it would be. You must have an idea. I think it's impossible to argue that you don't know how many people, give or take, roughly as a percentage, are back in your building.
Well, I don't know how many checked in yesterday, but what I can say is that I've been working with the permanent secretary and our officials on making sure that the environment is safe so that we can get as many people as possible returning, and that work's been going on over the summer.
Do you not know the answer, or do you know the answer and it's just embarrassingly low and you don't want to say?
I don't know the answer. I'm returning to work today and we'll be back in the office tomorrow. I wasn't in the office on Friday. I have to admit, Julia, I've been...
You're allowed to have a day off. That's fine. But you've been in the office for the last few weeks. You must have a clue.
I don't know the numbers of people who came in on Friday, if that's your answer, if that's your question.
What about Thursday?
But what I do know is I've been working very hard to make sure that people can return to work safely.
All right.
It won't be possible for everyone to return to work because you won't be able to have every workstation.
Do you accept, though, that the government needs to lead from the front on this and get people back? Will you send me a text tomorrow when you see how many people are in the office?
I may well do that.
Thank you very much, George Eustace, Environment Secretary. Thank you very much.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
But let's talk about schools going back, despite the fact I just read these two tweets from Terence and from Graham. Terence saying, with the kids back at school, we'll give the Joe public a rest from hearing about it from the media. And Graham says, can't wait for the schools to go back. I don't have kids. I'm just sick and tired of hearing about it. I can agree. I'm kind of sick and tired of talking about it, other than the fact that I know how important it is. And also, I hate to tell you, millions of us do have kids. 9 million pupils set to go back this week. All the papers saying, from Tuesday. Given it's a bank holiday today, I don't know a single school personally. I thought maybe it's just Maya that's going back tomorrow. Because, of course, as we know, first day of school, you're not actually back at school, are you, if you're a pupil? Because it's a school inset day. Remember, the teachers who are busy working all summer, remember, have to have an inset day on the first day back. So lots of schools, I think, will end up going back Wednesday or Thursday. But will they all? 3% apparently of head teachers are saying they're not even sure if they are going to actually reopen their schools fully, according to a survey of the National Association of Head Teachers. They show 700 schools, 3% of the total number, will phase students back or use transition periods to reopen. Well, let's talk about all this with Jeff Barton, who's General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders. Good morning to you, Jeff.
Good morning, Julia.
I really do have a lot of sympathy with the people who are going, for God's sake, stop talking about schools going back. But the reality is we ain't getting the country back out and about and everyone working again and functioning again until we've got the kids back at school. It's absolutely crucial. How confident are you that schools are, vast majority are going to be up and running this week and everything functioning?
Oh, I'm very confident about it. I mean, some schools opened last week. Leicestershire opened last week and saw the vast majority of young people back in school. And I think that there will come a time, your listeners will be pleased to hear, when people like me aren't here speculating about whether young people will be in school, because they simply will be, and the rhythms, routines of school will carry them through. And I think, what I understand of the survey you're quoting this morning, which is by a different association than mine, is that actually what a lot of schools will do is what we did in normal times. So, for example, when I was ahead, what we did was to bring certain groups of pupils in at the beginning of the year in order to establish discipline and routines over 2 or 3 days. And I think that is probably even more important this year. And you'll see by the end of the week, every child will be back in school, unless their parents are so anxious that they don't spend them. There'll be no block in the teaching profession.
That is still a real worry, isn't it, how many parents are concerned. And it does seem to me that I reckon if you actually asked, if you polled parents who were happy about their kids going back and polled parents who were unhappy, you would probably find the parents who were happy had spent a little bit more time looking at the facts. That the facts are really clear about how safe schools are, particularly for children, but also for teachers. Look, if mum or dad are shielding because they've got a very serious susceptibility to COVID, completely understand if they're unhappy about their kids going back. Let's make sure those kids get that remote learning if that's what they need. But for everyone else, and that is the vast majority of us, it really is as safe as it can possibly be.
That's absolutely right. So a couple of points on that. First of all, we've seen in other places, in Denmark, for example, which has a different kind of cultural attitudes, there were parents there who in the early days were worried about their children going back. And the second point is that I think there's some kind of willful misinformation sometimes. So all that stuff that came out very late on Friday night where the government was talking about its 4 tiers of schools going back, I think some people misinterpreted that as if schools were going to go onto a rota system if there was an outbreak of COVID in the school. And it really wasn't saying that. What it was saying was, if you're in an area where the rates are going up, then you need to reduce the number of young people moving through the area. That's not about them in the school, it's about them on public transport, in supermarkets, and newsagents on the way to and from school. And I think some people have interpreted that thinking, maybe it's not as safe as I thought. It really is as safe as it can be, and indeed as safe as schools ever could be, because this is always, and always has been, about managing the risks that you have when you have large groups of people in institutions like schools.
And I can't give a single parent who's not ever had the letter saying, there's been an outbreak of flu, make sure your child doesn't come to school if and when, or there's been the norovirus, or I think we had scarlet fever at our school at one point. I have to say, I've always been more bothered about the nits, because it's just another thing on my to-do list, do the comb through with a daughter with long hair. But we don't sort of panic and keep our children off school for months on end when we hear about those diseases.
No, and it's a reminder of a period of extraordinary national anxiety where everybody has fallen into a kind of default of being worried about everything, worried and cross, essentially. And I think one of the things that will now happen, I hope, is that we'll see young people start to get back into school, and hopefully we'll start to get a realistic sense of what might exams look like next year. I listened to Robert Halfen today saying there's a 50-50 chance of whether exams will run next summer. Let's please not start creating a kind of apocalyptic vision that exams may not go next year. Let's instead get some of that assessment under children's belts earlier, so we're not in the position of so many young people feeling let down as they were this year.
Well, the Labour Party is today calling for exams to be held later in the year to allow that extra teaching. Because, of course, look, the kids who were supposed to be doing GCSEs and A-levels earlier this year in the summer, they had, by March, pretty much had all their teaching. They'd have been off doing revision classes from the Easter onwards. They didn't actually miss out on much of the teaching. It's those who are doing them this year, so entering the year of their exams in this week, that they are the ones who have lost out, you know, 3, 4, 5 months of their actual learning. That's going to be a big concern. Does moving the exams from, they start, well, May, June, moving them all to July, would that help? I mean, there is an argument, isn't there, where, you know, let's just get it all together, let's have some more intensive learning, maybe a longer school day, certainly rather than a shorter school day, to catch up that learning. Is there any need for exams to be cancelled?
I certainly wouldn't be talking about it, and I think it's not fair to those young people who will have got partway through their preparation for it to be told now that those exams might not appear. I think there's a couple of things. I think the Labour Party suggestion is worth looking at because it gives you 3 or 4 more weeks of teaching time, potentially. I think, though, if you look at GCSEs, I mean, GCSEs were designed in a different era, weren't they, when young people were either staying in school or leaving school altogether. We do expect GCSE young people to have 30 or more exams. They'll have 3 English exams, 3 maths exams. I mean, a huge kind of industry of exams. It would seem to me sensible you could reduce the sheer number of exams, partly by putting some of that assessment into the term time set by exams, so they're being sat in October and getting some of that under young people's belts. And I hope there's a kind of openness to thinking differently and reassuring young people that it's not all or nothing in the way that Robert Halford.
That's a very, very good point, especially as you say, a lot of people forget now. You don't leave school at 16. That's not, you know, you have to continue some sort of learning until the age of 18, whether it's at college or at school, in which case, as you say, they could well be held back later. It seems to me, though, that there needs to be an argument for sort of just an extra effort from teachers. I know, look, you and I have discussed so many times about the kids who haven't been getting schooling, but we know the schools where they have been doing their best to do the teaching. Yes, everyone may well be tired. A lot of people are having to sort of really pull together to make, you know, this work. This just seems to me to be a time when we just need an absolute doubling down in terms of discipline, getting those lessons started, making sure kids are getting through the work, as opposed to a sort of, oh, isn't it all terrible? Oh, kids have lost out. Well, we're going to have to just give up for another year then. That sort of attitude is the exact opposite of what we need right now. We need a can-do, get down. We've lost a lot of learning. Let's get to it. We're going to have Saturday schools. We're going to do that. Shouldn't we have that sort of attitude rather than forget the October half term, things like that? People can't go away anyway. We should be just working through and making sure we get our kids up to speed.
Well, I think one of the things we'll probably see is teachers welcoming young people back, liking hearing their laughter, their voices and so on, hopefully not having to spend all their time saying put your face mask on when you go in the corridor, that kind of thing, and instead doing what teachers do best, which is assessing where the child is, what the curriculum needs to look like, and then just relentlessly teaching them. And I think, you know, there was talk early on in all this we need a kind of cavalry of counsellors coming into school and youth workers and so on. I actually think that the epicentre of all of this will be teachers teaching those young people well, knowing what it is that they need to learn, someone else making a decision about assessment, which needs to be done quickly so we know what kind of exams we are preparing those young people for, and then frankly, as you say, let's get on with it. And I think parents will rejoice at that.
Yeah, I have to say, can we stop talking about mental health and just talk about educating children, because that's what will make them feel better. Just finally, there's some talk in the papers today about the prospect of young people disrupting classes, by forcing school closures, by a lot of kids coughing a lot will make teachers worried. Come on, didn't everyone just look up at that point? Go, oh, help, whenever you hear a cough, you feel a bit anxious now. But that actually could mean that schools end up, you know, closing down, you're sending kids home, quarantining and the like. How are teachers going to deal with that?
Yes, it was a pretty squalid press release from the Department for Education about behaviour and not shouting at children and so on. They're the last people, frankly, who need to be advising teachers on discipline. I think what we will find is the majority of young people delighted to be back in school, see their teachers, the routines and rhythms will continue as usual. And if some misbehave, well, they'll be put in detention or told off or whatever we used to do. Yep. And that will be a real sign that normality has resumed.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
The latest polls have shown that Tories and Labour are neck and neck in the polls, 40% each. Labour has finally drawn level with the Tories for the first time since last year. Very big blow to Boris Johnson. It was a time when, during early stages of the pandemic, during lockdown, when he was sky high. At one point, he was 26 percentage point lead. So what went wrong for the Tories? Well, let's talk to Sir John Curtis, get it right, Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde. Good morning to you, Sir John.
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. I mean, this has been an incredible fall from grace in terms of the polls. Why do you think it's happened?
Well, I hate to deflate your headline bubble, but can I point out that it's not polls plural that put Conservatives and Labour. It is polls singular. And actually, opinion of the company that's responsible, it is a company that has been putting the Conservative lead rather less than have other pollsters. If you actually take the average of the most recent polls conducted by the five companies that are currently polling regularly, we currently have a 5-point Conservative lead. That is down a point from the equivalent position but in July. But so far, at least, that is the extent of the further drop in Conservative support. Now, certainly what is true is that the Conservative lead over Labour is less than it was at the general election when it was 11 points. And indeed, we are at the stage because, Scotland is basically barren territory for both Conservatives and Labour, whereby actually, if we have a general election now, there's probably only a 50% chance that Boris Johnson will get another overall majority. So there's certainly still plenty there for the Conservatives to worry about. Also has to be said, however, that quite a lot of this is not necessarily in the Conservatives' hand. The biggest movement so far since last December's general election has been the decline in Liberal Democrats' support. And it's very clear across all of the polls that that decline in Liberal Democrats' support has gone most heavily towards Labour because it consists essentially of Remain voters. And yes, there's a warning, therefore, to the Conservatives that, you know, one possibility in the future, if the Liberal Democrats don't recover, is the Labour Party will be able to consolidate the Remain vote behind it in the way that the Conservatives were able to consolidate the Leave vote back in December. But the truth is, at the moment, you know, actually, for a government that has faced the difficulties that it's faced, and frankly, yes, the quite considerable criticism that the public express about the handling of coronavirus, actually, it's still quite surprising that it's still running at around an average of 42%
of the polls. It is interesting that the support for the government has stayed way ahead of that from the public than from, say, the media in terms of the criticisms. But whether it's an 11-point lead as in December or a 5-point lead or a 0-point lead, whatever it is, does any of that really matter at this stage in the electoral cycle, given that with an 80-strong majority, that ain't... I mean, you need an awful lot of Tory MPs to defect or start making trouble for that to be an issue for Boris Johnson for the next four years.
It's the starting causing trouble bit you have to worry about. In other words, Boris Johnson's authority does indeed rest on the 80-seat majority. The thing that will potentially undermine his authority in the minds of Tory MPs is if they begin to be concerned that actually their seats might be at risk at the next election. So opinion poll leads do matter for governments in that if a government really does start to get into serious electoral trouble, then it's their ability to maintain the loyalty of backbench MPs becomes more difficult. And whatever is true in general, I mean, you know, even with a majority of 80, backbench MPs are not necessarily as loyal as they once were. Yeah. The other thing I think want to bear in mind, at the moment it's still early days, but when we come to next May, assuming that we are able to hold these elections, we will have a massive round of local and devolved elections. London Mayor, Scottish Parliament, Welsh Assembly, County Councils, lots of district council seats. That will be a major political event, the biggest political event midterm during this Parliament. And if the Conservatives were to lose a lot of ground in that, then certainly Conservative activists and backbench MPs might begin to worry about the direction of this government. But, you know, that's still many months away as yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's still a very long time away, although not as far away as the next general election. In terms of the appeal of the Labour Party, how much of this is down to the fact that Jeremy Corbyn is no longer the leader and it is Keir Starmer? Or how much of this is down to the ongoing issues of, I mean, the fact that you brought in the Remain leave and that this coalescing of votes around the same, you know, 2016, my God, still going on about it 5 years on, the debate over Brexit. How much is just down to a credible leader who's frankly frankly not, you know, not a hard leftist, someone who's considered to be credible by the public, and therefore the votes are just going to come straight back to Labour?
The answer is a mixture of the two. So I've already said to you, you know, a significant part of Labour's rise in support is gaining ground from the Liberal Democrats. Yeah. But the other, it is true, the Labour Party is gaining more votes from the Conservatives at the moment than the other direction. And that is actually coming partly from Remainers and partly from Leavers. And yes, Sir Keir Starmer has certainly impressed those members of the public who formed a view about him that they at least can imagine him as being prime minister, whereas one of Jeremy Corbyn's problems was that many people found it difficult to contemplate that prospect. That said, there's still a lot of people out there who are still going, well, who is Sir Keir Starmer? I don't really know who he is. He's still got an awful lot more work to do to make a wider impression on the public. And of course, that's been rather difficult, given that in many respects, politics has been in suspension because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I think the answer to you is that, you know, so far, agreeable progress from his point of view, still plenty to do and still a great deal to do to persuade people that the Labour Party more generally could provide this country with more competent government than Conservatives. So whatever criticisms people may have of the Conservatives, until they're convinced the Labour Party would do a better job, they're not necessarily going to go in that direction.
Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.